Welcome to the Kitchen Table Finance Podcast, where we make retirement planning easy and enjoyable. Discover practical advice to create a retirement strategy that fits your lifestyle and budget. Get ready for market updates, intriguing finance headlines, book reviews, special guests, and inspiring case studies. So grab your favorite cup of coffee and join us at the table as we talk about everything finance and retirement. We're here to support you in achieving the retirement of your dreams. Let's jump right in.
Hey, Dave, how are you doing today?
Not bad, Nick. How are you?
Fantastic.
That's
a beautiful, gloomy March day.
Yeah.
See, I survived another St. Patrick's Day weekend, so that was a win.
We got an inch of snow, Nick. We got an inch of snow. I keep thinking it's spring. We were all optimistic last week when we recorded. Right. The sun was out. It was 45 mm-hmm. degrees. Yeah.
That's right. That's why they say in Michigan, if you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes.
Yeah, unless it's February or March, then you might be waiting 6 months. Anyway, we digress. Let's talk about finance.
Yeah. So we are back with our monthly edition of retirement headlines of stuff that you and I have read. And so that our listeners, depending on if you're on YouTube or the traditional podcast channels, don't have to read more than the headlines. We're going to read the articles and let you know our take on whether or not it's worth your while.
And this is kind of exciting because this is the first time we've done this edition where we've got a couple of articles that clients sent to us and said, hey, you know, here's a couple of things you should talk about.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. First one is actually something that a listener sent us. And it has to do with Mr. Oh, I'm going to butcher this name, Robert Kiyosaki. I always refer to him as Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Right.
Because that's his claim to fame is the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book, which I read. I don't know if you read it, Dave. I actually did read it.
I have not read it.
It's got some interesting takes in it. I obviously lean more towards like the psychology piece of it more than the, buy super risky investment / real estate part of it. But at any rate, Mr. Kiyosaki predicts that your 401k is toast, saying that the S&P 500 is going to tank and along with it, your 401k. And so you should instead, I think, buy gold, precious metals. I think he's real high on silver right now, even throwing out some of the cryptocurrencies as kind of a way to get around your 401k becoming toast. So what say you, Mr. Shotwell?
I would come at this from the standpoint of, well, yes, he's going to be right at some point. There will be a market correction and or crash. We expect that. You know, we've talked about this a lot, that statistically speaking, there's a correction pretty much every year since World War II, where the market drops 10% or more from its most recent high. And that's just part of the equation. So I guess my question for him would be like, are you talking about, and then there's no recovery? Are we not, you know, is this, and it, at that point, then I don't know that it would matter much what you did with anything.
Eventually, right? If you're like a doomsdayer, you're going to be right at one point.
Yeah, eventually.
Right? What's your famous old saying about clocks?
If a stopped clock is right twice a day.
That's right. So when I hear things like this, the first thing that kind of comes to mind, and this is a Morgan Housel, which is that, you know, he's playing a different game than you are, right? Yeah. Like his big thing and his kind of claim to fame other than the book was rental real estate. And he's real big on that. And so, you know, for him, because he's not really worried about the stock market or investing, the more people that buy his book or his, you know, I think he's even selling some sort of real estate classes, things like that.
Probably.
Like the more people that sign up for his classes, the better that he does. And so what are his financial incentives, right? To tell you that your 401k is going to be toast and you should probably figure out a different way to do things. And I'm sure at some point there's a link somewhere for a class you can sign up or you can buy his book to learn how, right?
Absolutely. No doubt. Like anything else, I'm not going to say he's right or wrong with regard to the S&P 500 crashing. Eventually it will crash and then it will recover. And, you know, that's not really the point. I find it kind of irresponsible to just talk in these blanket terms that everybody should invest in certain things a certain way, particularly when you're going into things that are illiquid and have other consequences. That's my take on it.
Indeed. I do concur. So from Mr. Kawasaki to our other favorite quote machine, Dave Ramsey came out and guaranteed that if you have a car payment, you will forever and always be poor.
Yes. Well, I guess it's a matter of how you want to define poor. And I almost feel bad for Dave Ramsey in a way, because I think he has a lot of very good things to say if you can get past the hyperbole that he uses to get attention.
Right.
You know, the concept of you and I both say it to clients. They ask us, you know, should I lease? Should I do that? There is no good financial planning way to buy a car.
Yeah.
Cars are expensive. They're a depreciating asset. They are not an investment. The best way to buy a car, and I got this concept originally from Dave Ramsey, listening to him on the radio 15, 20 years ago. You buy the cheapest, junkiest car that will get you from point A to point B. And when that car dies, you buy one just like it and repeat. You don't buy a new car. You don't buy a fancy car. You don't buy a car for its status symbol. That's all good. And I don't follow that. I mean, I need a reliable car to get me from point A to point B, but the concept, the philosophy behind it, that my car shouldn't be my status symbol, is sound. Right.
Yeah.
But why do we have to take it to the hyperbolic click link headline of you will always be poor if you do this?
Right. Absolutely. And that's just it, right? Like if you're Dave Ramsey, you need people to view, listen, you need to inspire them. And so, you know, giving the real advice, which you just gave, isn't exactly going to get bunches of people to listen to them or more followers or people to click on the links, right? And so we have to take it to the extreme, which is a shame because we don't really need it because there is some sound financial advice in there. The other thing too that actually, interestingly enough, as I was reading the Kawasaki, man, I'm butchering that article, there was another video where he was actually like talking about Dave Ramsey and how terrible Dave Ramsey was, which was funny on itself. But also like one of the things he said actually struck me as like that makes sense, not necessarily in the context he was saying it, but that was like, think about who his listeners are, right?
Yeah.
Like the listeners that he has, the people that call into his show are the people that buy really expensive cars that can't afford them to begin with, right?
Right.
Like that's who he's like, that's his target market. And you, like the average person is probably not his target market for that. And so you shouldn't be shamed because you bought a decent car when you had the money to do it. Because that doesn't always mean you're going to be broke. I have a car loan. I'm not broke. That figures into part of my budget and it makes sense. Like, sure, I could have bought a bike and drove and rode my bike around, but like, I didn't need to do that, right? Like, I have enough, I'm saving enough money. I'm doing all the things that I should do that I can afford a car and I can afford those things. So I think it, you know, just comes into context of like, yes, cars are terrible investments because they're not really investments, right? So no matter what the sales manager at the dealership says, you are not making an investment. But also, like, it's okay to use your money and spend your money. You don't have to save 70% of your income to be happy, right? Like, you don't have to save everything. You can have a nice car and that might bring you happiness more so than saving that extra car payment and having a junky car, right? Like that's the reality of it.
I'm with you.
Whew, really got hot and bothered by our two favorite.
Usually it's me that has to calm down a little bit.
So moving on. There's a Wall Street Journal article, a lifestyle article about married couples who are child-free taking over TikTok. Something they're calling themselves dinks. Do you know what a dink is, Dave?
Well, I do now. Dual income, no kids.
That's right. That's right. And so it's like this trend of like, hey, we don't have kids and we're proud of it. And look at all this money we have because we don't have kids. Or like our dog is spoiled because we both have incomes and don't have kids. Yeah. Or there's a couple of iterations like don't have kids yet. And it's a funny article if you get a chance to read it of like the iterations of it. But
right.
What we're seeing is more and more people delaying having kids or not having kids at all and kind of the benefits of it from a financial standpoint, which like, I guess kind of like just like not buying a super expensive car. Right. Right. Like,
this just in, children are expensive. Yeah. Oh boy. They've hit on something there. They might be onto something. I need to get on the Tiki Talks because, it sounds like, right. There's a lot of things that come to my mind when I think about this idea and it's all good. And it was a good article. And I think there's some very good reasons that people should consider, you know, that stance, depending on their situation. It's not always realistic for everybody, but you know, first thing that comes to mind is it's basically a very individual choice, just like any budgeting thing, really. Like, there's more to it than just the money. Mm. And I guess I take kind of a jaundiced view when I see people making a big deal about whatever they're doing that works for them on social media. And I don't partake in social media any more than I have to. But to me, a lot of it seems like trying to justify their decisions by making it sound like it should be the right thing for everybody. So, you know, I guess it's hard to think of a financial decision that would be more personal than that one, you know. And I'm certainly not going to advocate that anybody go on TikTok for advice on whether they should have kids or not for money or for whatever reason.
So, and I think of it too, like I've gotten some questions around like, well, you know, should we wait to have kids until we're in a more financially stable position? And I'm a firm believer that there's never a good time to have kids in terms of like if you wait too long, you're going to be exhausted or too into your career and you won't have the time that you would when you were 20 versus like if you're 20, you're probably not going to have a whole lot of money. So there's no perfect, you know, time where you say, okay, at age 32 and a half is the best time to have kids.
I'm sure someone we know has a spreadsheet where they have worked out exactly, like you put your incomes in the top and your career trajectory and plug in the inflation rate and some health things. And it'll probably tell you exactly to the month when you should have kids.
Right.
And you and I would both just scoff at that and say, well, life does not fit on a spreadsheet. But before you say no one would do that, I'm sure it's been done.
Well, admittedly, I had kids young, so like I don't know what the opposite is, but like what I would tell people is like, don't worry so much about like what's the perfect time to have kids, like financially or not. Like there's benefits of having kids in your early 20s, and there's benefits of waiting until your mid to late 30s, right?
Like I can tell you learn really fast how to budget and live within your means when you're 23 and have to buy diapers and formula. And
indeed. And you know, if you wait later on, you have more money to do things and maybe work less. Like there's positives and negatives both way, right? Like if you have kids when you're 20 and you're done paying for college, by the time you're 45, you have this window where you're making a bunch of money that you don't necessarily have to outlay. Theoretically.
Had this conversation with some friends of mine because I'm, you know, in my early 50s now and had my daughter I was 23 when my daughter was born, and a lot of my friends have junior high and high school aged kids now, while both my kids are launched and through college. And they're a little bit jealous of me, but I don't think they would have been jealous when we were 25 and they were out having fun.
Right. So,
and I'm certainly not complaining, but I think it illustrates your point about those trade-offs. So.
All righty. Next up, we have, you're going to love this one, Dave. Wall Street Journal article, how many savings accounts should I have?
Yeah. Yeah. You and I, we're opposites on this, right?
So I believe that I personally have upwards of 15 different savings accounts at multiple different institutions.
That would just drive me insane.
So there's pros and cons to this, right? Like the pros are like all of those savings accounts have a different purpose. They have a different place. It's kind of like the envelope system of things. The cons, like you said, is you got to keep track of these things, right?
Yeah.
Anytime you need to update a beneficiary on one savings account means you need to do it on 17 savings account or an address or whatever update you need has to happen in multiple locations. There's also like, you know, occasionally there's fees if you have, you know, too little. So that's something you have to think, or if you have dormant account fees, right? So if you have an account and you haven't done anything with it, you can start getting dormant account fees, or they can send your money to the state. So there's definitely things that you have to look out for.
Do you work for Michigan State University? Are you looking for solid retirement planning advice? Reach out to Dave and Nick, hosts of the Kitchen Table Finance podcast and certified financial advisors. They specialize in the unique benefit plans offered by MSU and how to capitalize on all you have available to you through your investments. Sure, you can glance at your package once a year and check some boxes, or you can make your money work for you. Find out if you're getting everything you could be with your MSU retirement plan by contacting Shotwell Rudder Bear Financial Planners at srbadvisors.com or simply search for the Kitchen Table Finance Podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. That's the Kitchen Table Finance Podcast, hosted by Shotwell Rudder Bear Financial Planners.
To kind of segue into, I take a completely different approach, but research has shown that people save better when they compartmentalize like this, right? And when we've, you know, and some financial planners, I don't know if you've done this with people, you probably have, actually will label those accounts with particular goals. Like,
oh yeah.
Like that account is your vacation next year. And this one is your daughter's marriage or, you know, wedding. So, you know, when you have particular, when you can envision how that money is going to be used, particularly, it does help save for sure. I'm no techie, but I use the same kind of concept, but through budgeting software that creates those little sub accounts within the one account that I have. And for me, that works. And I think that's the big thing here. And this is the approach I've always taken with clients, because I've got some who do it both ways.
Yep.
I don't care as long as it works for you.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, this is actually a great segue into one of our other articles. So Forbes put out an article of 5 common budgeting methods. So there's the envelope system, which is kind of what we talked about, right? Mm-hmm. Like having, and this, I think this was like, well, I don't know if he invented it, but in one of Dave Ramsey's books, he actually had people with envelopes and would put cash into different envelopes, right? Like that was his thing.
Yeah. Well, that goes, our grandparents were doing that if they budgeted. Right? I mean, that's been around for as long as it's been cash.
There's something called zero-based budgeting, which is where you assign every dollar of income.
That's the system I use. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And then there's percentage-based budgeting, which is like, okay, you're going to have a percentage that goes into this category. So a common example of that is like the 50-30-20 rule, where like 50% is household expenses, 30% is like mortgage, stuff like that, and 20% is like fun money or, you know, discretionary spending. I'd probably change those around to, you know, put at least 10% into savings, but I digress. There's the pay yourself first method, which is like, hey, no matter what you do, at least put all of your savings in first and then kind of budget from there. And then there's kind of a priority-based budgeting, which is like ranking different expenses based on importance. And, you know, I guess theoretically, if you run out of money, then you just don't use that expense, right? Like, I guess the whole point of this is there's a lot of different ways to do this. And what I find is, you know, when people come in and are successful, they've found one that works for them and they stick to it and they track and they manage at least to some degree. So they know that, you know, what their system is, how they're using it and making sure it works for them.
Yeah.
So long story short, find a system that works for you and stick to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's see, what else we got? Another Wall Street Journal article about work-life balance, career post-achievement. So there's an article, I think there's three or four people in it. I don't know if you saw this one, Dave, but essentially like they kind of hit the pinnacle of their career and decided to step back and just like, instead of like retiring, like find something else to do. But like there, you know, there are stories about foregoing big bonuses or deferred comp and just basically like, hey, I've done everything I wanted to do in this career. I have enough money where I can, you know, go do something else where I have more passion for it. Maybe I'm making less money, but I have more freedom and flexibility.
Yeah, it's just another derivation of the whole, I guess, you know, the FIRE movement being kind of the extreme idea, right?
Right, but
financial independence. And it fits with that idea that we've promoted in a lot of different forms that for a lot of people, retirement shouldn't just be a hard stop sometime in your 60s where you go from a full-fledged career into, you know, playing golf or sitting on the beach. I liked the idea, though, that for each of these, it was really like a passion project. You know, it was something they really, really knew that they wanted to do and had reached the point where the money, like they knew they had figured out what their happiness jam was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Surfing and.
And I thought it was interesting just in terms of like, we've talked about it before with like the building wealth, net worth, like, hey, I've gotten, you know, once you're income, right? Like, hey, once I hit a certain, like, I always wanted to hit X amount of income. And then when you hit that, like the bar moves, right?
Right.
Like, and it's like the same thing as far as career wise, like the success trap of like, hey, I want to be in this role. And then once you get there, there's always another level up. Like, hey, what if I did this? Or, you know, so, you know, just figuring out like what's enough for you. What, you know, are you generating more happiness by continuing to climb the ladder?
Right.
This is like a article around people that like got to that rung on the ladder and decided that was enough, right? Like, let's find something else to do. So I thought it was interesting.
That was very good.
Let's see. We've talked about this one in the past, but things have kind of changed a little bit. Yeah. So it's another good reminder. That's Morningstar put out an article on should you pay down your mortgage?
Yeah, from Christine Benz, who's one of my favorites. And, you know, it kind of caught my eye because, you know, she's looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, a lot, we get asked this question a lot. And I usually look at it in terms of like, okay, what's your overall return on your portfolio? But your portfolio is going to vary and your mortgage is fixed. She's just looking at it from the standpoint of, hey, we're in a world now where you can get 5% on fixed assets.
Right.
Safe stuff. And that's a more, and you know, I liked the way she kind of went about that's really what you're comparing. And if you've got a 3% mortgage from 2020 and you can make 4.5% or 5% on money markets and CDs right now, you know, that's a little different. You know, you're not necessarily worried about what the stock and bond market does. You're just looking at what you have in cash and what you have in savings, kind of apples to apples there. She's done a whole series of these articles on what higher bond and savings account yields mean for retirees. This is just one of them. The other thing that I liked about the article is it basically gives a diagnostic, which is the same thing we go through with clients. Where are you at in your life stage? Where are you at in your mortgage? What are your alternatives? What are you likely to make on that money if you're not putting it on your mortgage? What's your backup plan if you need that money? Because if you pay your mortgage down, yes, you can get a home equity line, you can do different things, but it's not as easy as having it in an investment account or in a bank account. So, you know, you weigh those things. Where's the money coming from and what are the tax implications? And her last one on the list is, do you just need the peace of mind of knowing your mortgage is taken care of? Or do you need the peace of mind of knowing you have that money in the bank and can get it anytime you want?
Yeah.
You know, as she put those both in there, and it's like for some, and the point is very good. We're used to that. We're used to talking to people about it who are coming at it from the standpoint of for their peace of mind, they want the mortgage gone. But it's actually equally conceivable that for someone else, that peace of mind might be, hey, I'm not worried about, you know, paying interest on my mortgage as long as I know I can write a check from my checking account for a certain amount.
Right. Well, and just think of how much that has changed from like 2 years ago where it was like, okay, well, your money can sit in the bank and you can earn 0.5%. You're paying 3% on your mortgage. And now it's like, okay, well, your money can sit in the bank and you can earn 5% and you're only paying 3% on your mortgage. Right. Like that's a little bit of a flip too. So it's interesting.
Which brings up another point too, is like over the 30-year life of a mortgage, that diagnostic may change multiple times, right? You know, there's nothing, you make a decision now based on the fact that you can get 4.5% on a high yield money market. But, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, that might be back to the point where, okay, the trade-off now is that the mortgage is more expensive or vice versa. And of course, if you've gotten a mortgage in the last 18 months, you're still looking at, you know, 6.5-7% maybe.
Right. Yeah,
so sure. Just keep that in mind too, that you've got to back out and take that long view of what is going to make sense over the life of your mortgage.
Yep. All good stuff for sure. Yeah. Last one on our list here, Dave, is too much stuff. Smart ways to declutter your home. It's like they wrote this one for my wife.
This one, well, it was like the Apple algorithms were speaking to me this morning. This article actually was on the Wall Street Journal back in December, but it popped up in my Apple news feed this morning on my phone, and I knew we were doing this podcast today. And it was it was front and center in my mind, like the AI was reading what was on my mind, because I spent the weekend painting my office, which meant I had to move everything out of it. And last night, as we're moving stuff in, I'm like, no, that's clutter. That doesn't need to go back in. That doesn't need to go back in. Now I've got to do something with that stuff, right? It's in a pile in the basement. So they just kind of go through. And, you know, it's common sense stuff everybody knows, right? You either throw it out, you give it away, or you sell it. But they had some ideas with some websites and things you can look at for giving things away. And it's just good to see an objective opinion on that.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever watched, it was during the pandemic, Marie Kondo came out with her Netflix special. And like, I feel like everybody was Marie Kondoing their closet.
Yes.
Like,
just
bless it and thank it for its service to you, and then like let it go.
right. Well,
so along those lines.
Yeah. And, you know, we've worked with a lot of retirees who relocate, right? And some of them, I've been surprised, particularly like a couple people I know pretty well, at how well they did. Like when I heard they were moving or downsizing, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And not everybody can just let everything go.
Oh, for sure. I've had clients who took years to sell their house just because they had a bunch of stuff to get out, even though they had another house already. So like that stuff is real. The more stuff you can do along those lines, the better for sure. Excellent. I think that kind of wraps it up for today. Dave, any parting thoughts of knowledge you want to drop on our listening audience?
Boy, I got nothing.
All right. Well, if our listeners are interested, make sure you check out our YouTube channel. You can see how well Dave painted his office.
Yes.
and if you have questions or articles you want us to discuss on the show, feel free to email us at info@srbadvisors.com. We love that stuff and would love to talk about what articles you're seeing. As always, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Nick.
Gather around and follow the Kitchen Table Finance podcast to learn about money and simple ways you can invest right now. You can find more practical advice at srbadvisors.com and contact the team for personal planning by emailing info@srbadvisors.com.
Media production.